Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Hi, I'm Christy. I'm an alcoholic.
Thank you.
Thank Toby for asking me to speak. And see, my sobriety date is April 9th, 2009. And I have a sponsor, and I sponsor others, and my home group is Tampa YPG. We meet every Thursday at 7:30. And I was taught to say those things in the beginning because that, you know, those are things that keep me accountable and keep me coming back. So, you know, and service. Service is a big part of both of those. So, let's see. I grew up in Bradenton, Florida, and I have two little sisters, and my parents are divorced. And drinking wasn't a big part of our house. You know, I never remember seeing anyone in my family drink. Later, after I came into the rooms, I realized what this box was in my mom's refrigerator. You know, it was wine, but like growing up, like I never knew, you know, anything about it. And but I do remember, like, after my little sister was born, I was more or less jealous most of my life. And it wasn't for anything other than the fact that, like, I always felt like I was in competition for something. My parents always encouraged us to do well in school, encouraged us, or told us that they loved us. You know, it was never anything like that, but it was kind of like something inside me just has this, like, drive to compete with someone else or, like, need for attention or something. And I always thought that I was just, you know, trying to do, like, be the good daughter or, like, clean the whole house before my mom got home just to make other people happy. And, looking back, like, it wasn't, like, I'm a people pleaser, so I like to make sure that everything is going okay before I'm okay, you know, and that's just how I was growing up. And when my parents got divorced, I took personally on the role of, like, making sure that my mom was happy, you know. I needed, like, if she wasn't okay, like, I tried everything in my power, like, as a 7-year-old to make sure things were okay. And, you know, I never really paid attention to that until, like, my behavior, like, later in life started to, you know, spiral because of alcohol. And, you know, I was always, like, afraid to ask for things, I guess. Because I didn't feel like I either deserved it or I was just scared. I didn't like the answer no, you know. I hear no and I cry, you know, because I want to get my way and I want everyone to agree with me. And if you don't, then either you're wrong or I'm going to pout until you give me what I want. And that's just how it was, you know. And so I started playing sports in, like, fourth grade. And I never really talked about feelings. I didn't really care what you, I cared what you thought about me, and so I'd try and, like, fit a certain role, but I never really knew what I liked. Like, in elementary school, like, I like catching butterflies without, you know, I didn't want to play with everyone else, you know, and in middle school, I would, like, stand next to one group, you know, but not really participate, because I didn't really want to be your friend, but I wanted to look like I was your friend. And, like, I just wanted to be a part of everything without actually being in it. You know, it's kind of like when I came over here, it's like, I want you to only know this much of me, so because if you know this much, then you're not going to like me. And so I did that for most of my life. And, you know, it's just something that I work on. Like, I have the one friend, and we're really close, and then that friend moves away, and then I get a new one friend. And, you know, continue that. And so, you know, middle school comes around and, you know, I started playing soccer and I was, you know, kind of like growing out of the, like, super shy phase into, like, I'll be a part of phase. And, you know, my dad was a coach in sports. You know, my parents, they didn't live too far away. And, you know, my little sister, like, I still felt like I was in competition with her. Like, grades wise, you know, I thought she was prettier. Like, I don't know where I got these ideas in my head, because it was never like, put in front of me as to this is how it is. You know, it was kind of just like, I would make up things in my head to that's how it was. And, regardless of outside circumstances. And, so I go into high school, and, I was in the marching band, and, still playing soccer, and I was really embarrassed, though, to be in marching band, so that no one, but I was in it because my mom wanted me to be in it, and I was afraid to tell her no, so I did it, you know, and I was miserable, like, I couldn't even do it, I couldn't even play, I don't think I played the instrument once when we were marching, and, so I was in that for 2 years, you know, suffering through. It was not bad. I mean, it was okay at some points, but, you know, I was doing it more or less not for me, but for someone else. And, so I did that, but what I really like to do is, like, run. Like, I like cross country, I like soccer, and I like track. So I casually graduated into saying that I didn't want to do that anymore. And, you know, I started running a lot. And it wasn't, and so I was, and I like to be part of, like I said earlier, like I like to be part of everything, so I would join every single club in high school. So it looked like I was super active, but really like not participate in anything, you know? And, I mean, I did, like I became, you know, like the key club president or whatever, and like track captain, like all that kind of stuff. Like everything looked good on the outside, but everything like on the inside, you know, it was still, I felt like I was, like, not really developing, you know, like, emotionally and, like, spiritually and, you know, just all of that kind of stuff because I didn't express it, you know? And so, I guess, I had all that stuff to keep me busy on the weekends. Like, I didn't even know people went to parties, you know? Like, it wasn't in front of me. I wasn't a part of it. And, like, I didn't date it. I had never had a boyfriend until, you know, the end of my freshman year and into the beginning of my sophomore year. And, you know, I started to hang out with different people, and I quit the marching band, you know, like, that's over. So I have a little more free time. But I still have, you know, sports to keep me going, you know, and, because we had to wake up early. So I couldn't stay out late. And, it started to come around this time when I started dating him, when I would go out to, like, get-togethers, I guess, and, like, they would be drinking, but I wouldn't. And so one day, he's like, do you want a drink? And I was like, I didn't really know, like, what I was getting myself into. So we go out to this park. I was 16, and, just the two of us, and we had, it was like a six-pack of, I don't know, Smirnoff something. And, so I drank all six, you know, and my first time drinking, and, you know, I ended up, I guess I didn't really black out, because I do remember parts of the drive home, where I was reading every sign, and everything was blurry, though, but I do remember the feeling of after I put it in, I felt like, because everyone else had been doing it, and I kind of felt like I had heard some things. So I felt like I was, you know, like everything just went away. Like fear, anxiety, worrying about doing well in school, worrying about fitting in, you know, like all that kind of stuff. Like I didn't really care. And I just started talking, you know, about whatever. And it was like a freeing feeling, I guess. And so I had a track meet the next morning, and I was actually up here at USF, and all I can remember is like wanting to puke the whole way up on the bus ride. And I didn't understand why, because like I said, I didn't know much about alcohol, but I did, you know, and so I asked him, I was like, why do I feel this way? And he's like, you're hungover, you know, and I didn't like that feeling. It was awful, but I did like the feeling after the drink, you know? I didn't have to, I just didn't worry about everything. Like, everything was okay. But at the same time, a lot of people, like, I've heard their stories, and they're like, got a big party, you know, a better social gathering. And it was just me and him, and I still had those same feelings, you know? And so I didn't really start doing that until, you know, a lot more until later. But, you know, that first experience, it taught me that, you know, I felt more of like a part of, I felt more like a grown up, like I was part of high school now. And so then when I'd go out, I didn't have to act like it wasn't my first drink anymore. You know, I was professional. And, so I'd go out to, you know, I finally started hanging out with different people in like my junior and senior year. And I thought that the best part of high school was drinking. You know, it came to that point. Like everything else, you know, I still did whatever. School, like that was okay in high school. Like high school was easy, you know. You can do whatever. For me, I could do whatever outside of that and still be okay. And, you know, and so our soccer team started having parties. My dad would let us have people over. We'd get to leave school early. Lying to my parents became much easier than telling the truth. You know, I started to date the drug dealer down the street. You know, we were in love, you know. And so I started working on that side, you know. And I started doing that kind of stuff, too. And so drinking, doing all this, and then it comes time for college. And, well, in high school, like, things, like, I started to, towards the end of my senior year, I started to not stay home at all. I started lying to all my friends because at this point, like, I was drinking more than, you know, they wanted to be around. And I was starting to do more drugs than they would ever know about because I wouldn't even talk about it, you know. It was like me, and I would hide it from everyone else. Because I didn't want anyone else to be a part of what I was doing. And, it was never enough. Like, it came to the point where, like, I got accepted to Florida State University, and so I went up there. And, like I said, like, I'm shy. Like, I don't want to meet any new people. Like, I want my one friend, and I'm good. And, so I go up there, and I know two people from high school. So I hang out with them sometimes, and then... But really, it's just, I'm on my own, you know? I like to do whatever I want to do. Like, I'll go out by myself, or, like, I'll go with a group, but then I'll come home by myself, because I don't really want to be a part of what you're doing. You know, I did, but I didn't really know how to act, and I just wanted to be, and do whatever I wanted to do. So, I go up there for a little bit, and that's fine, and then I started to come home every weekend. And because I couldn't find what I wanted to up there. Like, I didn't have the acceptance. Like, by the time my senior year in high school, like, I finally felt like I had made it. You know, I'm friends with the people I want to be friends with. Like, I'm known for what I want to be known for. And that's it. And then I go to high school, and I'm like, nothing. You know, I'm in a dorm. And I have no one to talk to other than, you know, Facebook or whatever. And so I start going back home, you know, 4-hour drive back and forth. And, things just started to continue, like, go down, and, you know, school is still okay, like, it's still a priority, like, making people happy is still a priority, like, people pleasing and putting on a show, you know, and I never knew it was, like, a show, I thought it was just the way that things were, and eventually, like, my parents started to hear things from other people, and, you know, I got really offended. I was like, how dare you think that I could do anything like that, because to their knowledge, like, I'm... a good kid who's getting good grades and, you know, involved in, you know, stuff, you know, clubs, organizations, whatever, you know, and it all looks good on paper for a transcript or for an application acceptance letter, but it doesn't look good for anything, you know, for me. And, so they start to hear stuff and I go back down for Christmas and, you know, I start, you know, I'm there for a week and I start doing whatever. Again, you know, the lying to my parents, like, I feel like I'm in high school, like, I don't have to follow any of your rules, and I'm a grown-up, you know? Meanwhile, like, I'm under their house, like, I have two little sisters still at home, and I don't care about any of that, you know? Like, I'm, you know, like, when I'm in my alcoholism, like, super selfish, and, you know, I didn't even see any of that growing up. Like, I didn't know what being selfish was, or having an ego, or any of that. Like, I thought it was, like, you know, I don't know. I just never thought that I could, you know, be a part of any of that or have that be like my character be in me, I guess. So I go, you know, I go back and I start to stop hanging out doing anything up in Florida State, and it was one of those things where I had to be in, I tried, like in the book, Big Book, when it says, I tried liquor to make me feel this way, or I tried beer to make me feel this way. Well, I did all those things, not knowing anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, like, I had to be in a, if I wasn't in a good mood, I knew I should drink this, you know, because by the end of the night, who knew? And it came to that point where I didn't know how I was going to feel at the end of the night, so I had to drive by myself if I wanted to go out with people. Like, because I'd get somewhere, and immediately either I would be really happy and want to hang out with you, or I would be super depressed and need to leave right away, you know? And I would sometimes find myself walking home, you know, wasted and, not knowing how I got home. You know, I blacked out many times and had just random people have to jumpstart my car, drive my car home for me, not even really caring what could have happened. I've hitchhiked before because, I went crazy and people were trying to help me, but I thought they were trying to get back at me. So I started hitchhiking and, it got to the point where I didn't even care, like, what was going to happen. I was so miserable and, I thought that I was just disappointing everyone else around me, and I was like, okay, well, if I die, it really doesn't matter. So I just go knock on this guy's window. I was like, I need a ride. And he gave me, luckily he gave me a ride home. But, it was to the point where nothing really mattered. And I didn't see how I was hurting my parents. My mom's sleeping on the couch at this point. Because after I stayed at Florida State, I went home with the intention of going back for summer, but not being able to make it. Like, I had classes. I don't know why I didn't go back up, honestly. Oh, I totaled a car. That's why. Before I got home, though, I was up there, and like I said, my roommates were fighting because I was driving them crazy, and I'd crawl across the street, like, go to the bathroom in inappropriate places, I'd black out, and security would take me up there, and my friends would have to carry me back down, and, I'd bring random people who I never even knew over to our apartment, like, not even knowing that I could potentially put myself and other people in danger. And, because I thought I was invincible. Alcohol made me invincible. Alcohol allowed me to not care about anyone or anything else except for the way that I felt. And I wasn't even drinking to drink. I was drinking to blackout. People drink today, and I just look, and it's like, they're sitting down, it's like, oh, just wait till they stand up. Like, that was my, that was my goal, like, I will sit until I have to get up, and I fall, like, that's all I wanted, and, so, when I went back home, I started to get, I would get a job, and then, I had this job in high school, and so they hired me back, but I started to drink on the job, and, because I realized that, if I can drink outside, why can't I just do it there? Why can't I just drink all the time? That's great. And I started to, portion control, half a water bottle, I can do this for this amount of time, and then I'll drink the other half for this amount of time. And, I had it all, I'm trying to control the way that I'm drinking, and I would hide it in, either under my bed or under my dresser or, in my clothes. It was everywhere. It was in water bottles, though, and I'd ration it, and it was the most exciting part of my day to pour it into those water bottles, and I would get so upset when they were gone, and, I never threw out the actual bottle, they were all in trash bags under my bed, and I'll never forget when my parents found it, because I don't know why, I just never threw it out, never, and, So, let's see, just continued to get, worse and worse, and I started sneaking out. I got kicked out of my mom's house, because I kicked myself out. I called my dad and said I need to leave. I woke up at my dad's house, and I didn't know how I got there. I knew that something had happened the night before, and it wasn't okay. And, I totaled a car in the meantime, I was drunk, and I rode it into a ditch, Thankfully, I didn't get a DUI, but I did, get hurt and I try to play it off. And, you know, all this time, like, my parents are watching all this stuff happen. Well, I just don't think they knew what to do about it. And, you know, and I'd get so angry at them. I called them come to Jesus meetings every single Sunday. They're like, Christy, you drink one more time, you're out. And I just knew they were bluffing, so I continued. You know, I'd go to church and I would drink. I'd do, like, everything involved drinking by myself. Like, I don't talk to anyone at this point. Like, I had no friends. I don't know if it's because they didn't want to hang out with me or because I chose not to talk to them. To this day, like, I just choose not to know. Because I don't want to hear it, you know, until I have to, you know, until I face them, you know, whenever. But, you know, one day I was Baker acted. I missed my sister's dance, like, recitals, performances, graduation. I would show up dressed inappropriately. I would fall out of cars. You know, I would, you know, just all, like, miserable, you know, incomprehensible demoralization, basically. And, you know, I was finally, like I said, I was Baker acted and didn't know what that was. I was very angry. I thought if I just wasn't living at home, then my parents wouldn't know and everything would have been okay. I thought it was just something that I was going through, that everyone else was doing it. I just chose to do it alone, you know? And it got to the point where I'm sitting, I lost a job. I was at my dad's house for 8 months. I had a different job every single month, and every single month I got fired for being on the job. I had no money. I committed bank kiting somehow. You know, and so I owed my parents all this money because our bank accounts were obviously, they were connected, and so they canceled everyone's account, according to me. And so they finally, you know, they were getting down to the last straw, you know, like I'm gaining all this weight because all I'm doing is drinking and eating. Like, I'd ride my bike to the liquor store every single morning after my dad went to work and make up millions of stories to the lady, this old couple. Oh, man. Same old couple, you know, and I would tell them I'm making dinner for the whole family or I'm having a party and what should I get, but I'd only get the same thing every single time I go in, you know, like the $9 bottle, and they just kind of, you know, went along with it, and then I'd go ride my bike home, and I'd fall off my bike many times, and, you know, I'd be scraped up, and then, you know, I was a mess, and finally, I was a writer. I would write down things. Like, I'd call people and try to talk to family members on the phone, but I'd have to write down everything because I wouldn't know what I would say. And if I was ever going to talk to them again, like, I need to know what we had talked about. And I would type in on the computer, and, you know, I would only admit that I had a problem when I was drinking. Once I got sober, I needed another drink, so I was okay. You know, like, I don't have a problem, I'm not an alcoholic, because I had heard these things, and I had been to, you know, they brought me to a couple meetings after the Baker accident, and, you know, I was drunk the entire time, though, you know, cross-talking, asking them, they would say things like, oh, I got skinny from drinking alcohol. I was like, how the hell do you do that, you know, like, I'm gaining millions of pounds, and you need to tell me how, and they're like, just go, you know, they're like, just be quiet, we'll talk to you after the meeting. So, and I never thought I would be able to learn the Serenity Prayer, you know. And so finally, you know, I'm in my room one night at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I wake up, and I try and go down, you know. Then my head starts spinning, and I need it to stop. And so I reach under the bed where I think I had hid some extra, and, you know, I take a drink, and it tastes like water. And I'm like, oh, man, really have a problem if it tastes like water now, you know. And I think part of me wanted to get caught. You know, sometimes I would leave it right on the nightstand, you know, waiting for my dad to walk in, you know, because I didn't know what to do, but I didn't want to ask for help. I'd always tell them, like, I'll only be able to get help when I, you know, want the help. You know, if I don't want it, like, it's not going to work. And so they went along with it for a little while. And then, you know, after that night, like, I found out that my dad had poured it down the drain and poured water into these bottles. And, they're like, so we had, like, I guess I had an intervention with my parents, you know, basically. And they're like, Christy, you either go to treatment or we force you to go to treatment. And, you know, I said no at first. And then I think a couple hours later, I was like, fine. And I did detox, I think, for a week before that. I didn't know it was detoxing. It was miserable. I started shaking. Couldn't eat anything off a fork, you know. Like, I would try, and we'd, like, go out to dinner, and it was, like, so embarrassing, and I had to hold it with two hands, and then eventually I just gave up because it was too hard. And I couldn't take showers. I couldn't stand up straight without shaking, you know. I'm going to the bathroom with, you know, not in, you know, where it's in my room, you know. And, you know, I had heating pads on my stomach. I had a fan at every part of the bed. And a week later, they bring me up to Tampa, and I'm over here to HCC, and there's bars on the windows, and I'm like, where have you guys taken me? You should have left me in Bradenton. It's just as bad. And I was so angry at them. Like, this is all their fault. Like, all the stuff that I've gotten myself into, the way that I'm feeling right now, it's their fault. And, you know, I didn't talk to them for the first 2 months I was up here. I was so angry. And, you know, I go into groups, and they start talking to me about, like, Alcoholics Anonymous and 12 steps and 12 traditions, and start saying the Serenity Prayer, and, you know, I don't really pay attention for the first, like, 3 months that I'm there. And I don't really, like, I get a sponsor, but I don't really take it seriously. Like, I don't really think, I thought it was, like, a joke, you know? My first meeting, my ex-boyfriend's there, like, he's in the program, and I'm like, I can't believe this is happening. You know, like, this is the last thing I thought I would be, you know? Like, I would judge people who drank too much, or I'd judge people who did drugs. And, you know, but here I am, you know? And so I do the whole treatment thing, and they tell me to be honest, you know, and 2 months in, I start talking to my parents again, because it was the first time that I, you know, one of the girls, they went back out, and I think someone died, you know, who I was in treatment with. And I was like, oh, man. I was like, okay. You know, I started to, like, become human again, I guess. Like, the alcohol's out of my system. You know, but I still didn't get it. Like, I still had the idea that I was going to drink. So I would save the money that they'd give me in treatment. And, you know, but I finally started talking to people again. Like, I had to develop communication skills, because the only people I talked to when I was drinking were, like, telecommunication people, or people who would sell you things. So, and I almost joined the Navy because of it. Because they would talk to me, and I just wanted them to listen. And they would come out and give me free lunch, and then I told them that my family had family issues, and I couldn't join them anymore. And, you know, thank God that didn't happen. And, I'm up here, and I get into the three-quarter halfway house kind of living thing, I've made my one friend in treatment, right? So I get her, and then we decide we're going to drink, so we drink, and then, you know, I hide it for a little while, and then I get caught, and, you know, I'm back in school, I have to leave school again, and then I go back into day treatment, and I still... You know, I do the deal. I do just enough to get by. Like, I'm doing just enough to show you that, hey, this is what you want to hear. And so I make another one friend while I'm in the one-month treatment stint again. And we start hanging out. And, you know, I listen. I do a little more than the last time. I get the sponsor. I call the sponsor maybe a little more. I didn't do any steps, though. Like, I didn't, like, they tried to get us to do steps. I just, honestly, like, I don't listen that well. I just don't like you to tell me what to do when I don't want to do it. And it took me a long time to get over that, because I drank again. You know, I started dating someone at the Salvation Army. We would go and, like, meet behind buildings. And it was just a mess, you know? And so I go drink again. I get a DUI. When I'm still in treatment. And, you know, my dad comes all the way up here and just to see me get handcuffed and go to jail. You know, and I still think I'm invincible because the week before that, I was drinking. I was still in treatment, like, after we'd have our last group. Like, I'd go to the beach and be like, oh, it's going to be a nice day to read and watch the sunset. You know, fully convincing myself that's all I was going to do. And I would go meet the wrong people and drive back in different clothes than I was wearing before. I went there, and you know, I got pulled over and I told the cop that I was an alcoholic and I needed to go to jail. And he just listened to my sob story and got me a cab, you know? And so that night I was like, I'm never drinking again, you know? But it got to the point, like, I really wanted to stop drinking, but I just couldn't. And, you know, because I would convince myself that I didn't want to. Like, I was miserable. And, but I'd still tell myself that it was fun. Like, this is what I wanted to do. And, you know, so that following week is when the DUI happened. And, like I said, my dad comes up and I go to jail. And he does everything in his power to try and help me. And I just take complete advantage of it. And I'm just, you know, and I want things done in a timely manner. You know, I'm telling the jail, like, I got to go to work. You got to let me out. And they're like, go sit down, ma'am. And I'm so hungover, like, I'm just puking the entire time. You know, because I put myself on a schedule, like, I'm going to be hungover for at least 8 hours, and I'm going to go drink again. You know, I was okay with that. I was okay with that. And I was okay with everyone, like, I was okay with the way that I was living because I would convince myself, like, I was in complete denial. I thought that I was hiding it from everyone else. In reality, everyone else could see it, but they, you know, they couldn't really do anything other than, you know, be there when I came back. And thank God they were. You know, and so I ended up going to the Soda Treatment Center in Bowling Green, Florida. And the whole spirituality side of this program, I refused to listen to. I would leave meetings when they would start, like when we would have our little groups in treatment, like I would leave when they would start talking about God. Anything that was brought up about him, like it wasn't necessarily that I didn't, like I was brought up like believing in, you know, God or whatever, but then I come to treatment, I want nothing to do with it. And, so, but the funny part is that this next treatment center, it was a Christian treatment center. We would go to church every day. And, like, that's all we did. We'd go to two groups and talk about the Bible. And, oh my gosh, it took me a while to get over that one. But, you know, I would read the entire thing and try to prove everyone wrong and be like, listen, you all don't know what you're talking about. And I would talk about HCC like I graduate on good terms. I'd be like, you know nothing. They're trying to tell me all this. And I try and act like I know everything about Alcoholics Anonymous and Big Book and what have you, let alone like I'd just gotten out of jail, you know, for a DUI after being in treatment for a year, you know. And because when I went to HCC, I was like, I'm staying for 7 days and I'm out. And all the tests, you mail me. And, you know, a year later, I get my DUI and go to another, this is all Christian treatment center. And, you know, and thank God I went there because that's where I found God, you know. I did. I finally gave up fighting. I stopped telling everyone that I knew what was best for them. And I stopped trying to prove everyone wrong because I would wake up every single morning with the intent to prove you wrong. That I knew everything. And, you know, I knew nothing. And I'd write in my journal. And, you know, I finally started to get my act together. And I gave up the fight. And I started praying like I really meant it. You know, and I asked for help. You know, I came back to Tampa. And I got into a halfway house. And I was at that halfway house. The way I came back was like, is it going to be Tampa or Delray? And the only reason I knew it was Tampa is because the opening in the halfway house was available. And if that hadn't been available, I knew that God had other plans for me. And, you know, but it was there. And so I come back to Tampa and I had a job, you know. The job that I had left after going over to Bowling Green. They hired me back. And I took the bus for almost a year, you know. I'd wake up at 5 o'clock every single morning and take the bus. And I started to, you know, little things started coming back into my life. I became the halfway house manager. You know, I continued to work at this job, and I enrolled back in school. You know, I take the bus to work, and then I take the bus to school, and I hated it, but it got me to where I needed to go. I started going to meetings, and I still didn't believe in getting a sponsor for about 9 months, but, you know, after doing all this stuff, and going to meetings, we went camping one night, and all we could do was talk about drinking. And I was like, I don't want to drink. Like, I just don't. Like, this is after this 9 months in. And Like, I really didn't want to drink. So we ended up coming back early. The next day, I got a sponsor. You know, the first girl that came up to me at YPG, she's like, come sit in the front. I was like, absolutely not. I was like, I'm perfectly fine back row. And, you know, 9 months later, I asked that lady to be my sponsor. And she took me through the steps, and I really wanted, you know, like, Brookie goes through the steps in, like, 24 hours. I just wanted to sit in a room and get through all of them. I wanted to feel better, and I wanted a solution. Like, I wanted what everyone else had. Like, I was okay. Like, I was sober, but I wasn't happy, you know? And I had to go through the steps in order to be happy. And when I admitted, you know, admitting I was powerless over alcohol and my life was unmanageable, like, that was fine. I was perfectly okay with that. And, you know, the unmanageability part was a little easier than admitting I was powerless over a liquid. But, you know, I got over that. Got over myself. And, you know, and then listening to everyone else in the meetings talk, like, it just baffled me that everyone could have the same feelings and emotions and problems and not, like, I knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous, but I came here, and you all were talking about, like, everything that I had done, you know, and everything that I felt, and I was like, how is this possible? And then I read the doctor's opinion, and it's like, and he explains it in there to where it's like, you know, and it's a disease, like, he explains it in terms that, like, I could understand, you know, and when they say that, you know, it's like an allergy. Like, I could get that, but I could not get that I was powerless. Like, I could not get that alcohol was controlling my life at first. And it took reading that and coming to these meetings and hearing you guys, you know, feel and think the same way that I did, that I was able to finally, like, fully concede to my innermost self that I was powerless and, you know, my life would become unmanageable. And then coming to believe in a power greater than myself, you know, I, like I said, like, that took some time. Like, I admitted it to my sponsor at first, but it was more or less to get through. That took me a little time, you know, or at least the first couple months. And, you know, and I eventually, like, we kept reading in the book, and I get over that one, too. You know, and it was more or less because I just wanted, I want to be able to live life on life's terms, and without doing what everyone's telling me to do, like, I can't. You know, I can't do it on my own anymore. I can't think that I'm right all the time, because that doesn't make me happy. Like, that doesn't allow me to do the things that I need to do in order to stay sober. And, you know, and making a decision to turn my will and my life to care of God as I understand him, you know, I did it, and it happened when I was in that treatment center. I can remember, you know, like, a lot of people say they can't remember when that happens, but, like, honestly, I woke up one morning, and I said, I'm done, and, because it was a lot of work. Like, I put myself through a lot of pain, you know, trying to make everything go my way, and, so I just gave it up, and it was told to me, it's like, I don't have to carry that burden of the world on my shoulders. Like, I'm not in charge. Like, who am I to say that there's a higher power who there's not? Like, who am I to tell you that this is right and this is wrong? If not, I'm here to listen, I'm here to learn, and I'm here to tell you my experience. And I am, like, when I made that decision, like, that was, it was my decision. And, you know, thank God, and I try to do that today, you know, and that's what I try and tell other people to do. And, when I had to do my fourth and fifth step, like, that was, it wasn't painful, honestly. Like, it didn't, like, it, the painful part about it for me was, like, writing it all down. I thought it took way too much time. And, like, I tried everything in my power not to have to write it down. Like, I tried spreadsheets, you know, I tried everything. And then finally she was like, you have one more day. And I was like, fine. So I did it, and we went over it. And, you know, that sense of, I think it was, like, the relief came in seeing the pattern of the way that I had acted and the way that I felt towards different situations in my childhood and in my adulthood, like, the beginning stages of my adulthood, you know? And, like, I didn't get much relief, and, you know, because it was over little things at first. It was the way that I reacted to situations, and I saw that in doing my fourth step. And, like, I was, you know, certain things I might have been embarrassed about, but she reassured me that I'm not, you know, that everything that I've done, someone else has done, and worse. Or, you know, not as bad. You know, it doesn't matter. It's all the same. You know, we all come in here with either, we all got here, maybe not the same way, but we're all here, you know? And so that gave me a little bit of relief, you know? And in hearing, you know, when I asked God to remove my defects of character. I didn't think that I necessarily had any, other than maybe, like, drinking, you know? Like, that was my biggest defect of character. And then it was pointed out to me, like, the ego and the selfishness and self-seeking and self, like, all that kind of stuff, like fear. And, well, all my defects basically boil down to fear. Like, I'm afraid of a lot of things, and I never thought I was scared. You know, I'm scared of being alone. I'm scared of talking to people. I'm scared of going to school. Like, you know, and I have to ask, you know, that's when I have to pray. It's like, if I'm in fear, like, I don't have faith. And today, like, I want to have faith that I can get through all these things, you know? And so, but the only way that I can get through those is to keep coming here and not drink. You know, like, I'm not going to sit here and say, like, I don't think about drinking sometimes. Like, I'm an alcoholic. And, like, those thoughts come up. But thank God, like, the obsession's been removed through doing the steps. And I don't have to think about it every single day of my life. Because, you know, if that was the case, I'd be miserable. And I would probably be drunk. Because there's no point. Like, for me, like, if I was miserable, like, there wouldn't be a point in staying around. Just because, you know, through experience, like, when I first came around and I shared something in the meeting one time, and you guys were like, well, if you don't think you're an alcoholic, go back out and drink. Like it says in the big book, you know? And so I did, and I learned my lesson, and I was an alcoholic, you know? And, you know, and through doing the rest of the steps, one of the biggest things for me today is service work. You know, I started to become miserable after doing them a couple months later. You know, I decided to get in a relationship and it doesn't work out. It's like for 2 weeks. And I was like, nothing's going right. And my sponsor was like, are you doing any, she's like, what are you doing for AA? I was like, nothing. I'm going to meetings. I have a home group. She's like, no. She's like, you need to get some sponsees, do some service work and get a commitment. So I did all that, and, you know, I started to feel better, and I started to realize what sponsor relationships were all about, you know? It's not about me anymore, you know? Meetings aren't about me anymore. You know, it's important that I get there and I show up, but what do I have to offer? You know, like, if I sit in a meeting every single time and I just listen, like, some days I should listen, you know? But other times, like, I need to share, you know? I have to have, like, the only way that I have what I have is by giving it away. You know, and it took me a while to realize that, but I was able to see through other people's actions. Like, my sponsor always told me, she's like, I can say whatever I want to say, but it's, people watch. Like, people are going to watch what I do more than what they hear what I say. And, people are going to, like, see how I live life through Alcoholics Anonymous, like, through my actions. And, not everyone needs to know that. Like, my job doesn't need to know that I'm an alcoholic. They just need to know that I'm responsible and reliable, and it's all due to this program. Like I said, the times that I feel like drinking, it's like, cause everything else is going okay, and this one is going horribly, and so, you know, this is my option, and I look at everything else, and it's like, the only reason I have all this stuff is cause I'm sober. You know, I could choose to drink today, and all that would go away. You know, I can ruin everything in an instant, the minute I pick up a drink. And, you know, that's scary. And, you know, like, I worked really hard to get where I'm at today, and, this is the first time this has happened. But, you know, like, I got a new car this year, and I paid the insurance, and, like, I pay for that, and I, have an apartment, and I pay for the rent, and, like, I'm in school. I pay for school, you know? And, like, that's crazy. And, I still don't like to talk to people at school. Like, I still have my one friend. And, like, in one class, you know? And, it's because he's in all my classes. And, but, you know, it's kind of cool. And, you know, last Saturday I went to the Kenny Chesney and Tim McGraw concert, and, you know, but the point, like, I get a phone call after from a sponsee, like, the first girl that I took to the steps, and, she's like, I'm gonna drink tonight, and, so all I could tell her was why, you know, You know, she didn't think she was an alcoholic anymore. I was like, I'm here if you need me. And so, you know, that sucks, but, like, I can't stop anyone from drinking. You know, I got nothing. All I have is, like, my, like I said, like, my experience and, you know, the way that I got sober and the way that I live life today, you know, and, like, that's what keeps me around. And, you know, and I used to take a treatment or a meeting into the treatment center over here at HCC, and, you know, those girls, like, I always thought they hated meetings because when I was there, like, I hated them, you know, but they're just so grateful. And they would thank me every single time for, like, bringing people in and showing them that, like, Alcoholics Anonymous works. And it's funny because, like, when new people come in, it's like, don't worry, it's going to get better. And, like, it's overwhelming, and but it does. It just gets so much better. And I can't, you know, it's times like the, like, I haven't spoke in, like, a year since I got my 2 years or whatever. And I didn't think it'd affect me like this. So thanks. And thanks for keeping me sober.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.